RCR with Paul Brennan, Reality Check Radio.
So, to the recent improvements and ongoing concerns regarding the Midwifery Council's scope of practice in response to recommendations from the Regulations Review Committee. We covered this last week, and we're going to talk more about it now with our guest, Sarah Henderson, a spokeswoman for Mana Wahine Kōrero, a Rōpū organisation of Tangata Whenua Wahine and Allies. Morena, Sarah, thanks for coming on.
Good morning. Yeah, thank you.
Where do you want to start? Maybe you could update us with what is happening with the language changes and removal of women from the Midwifery Council's what scope of practice. There were other things that they slipped in there as well, and then we can get on to other things. So what did you make of when you first heard of this? What was your reaction?
When I first heard of what was happening?
Yeah, well, the changes in language that they were making and moving away from 20 years of doing it one way, which seemed to work fine,
yeah,
to sort of like diluting down even the role of the woman in her own pregnancy and birth, let's say.
Yes. Well, when I first read the scope of practice, the wording seemed to me to be more than just ridiculous. It seemed sinister and in direct conflict with everything that I understood about Te Ao Māori and a Māori worldview. And I followed what this, if you follow the language along and you follow the words along and you ask yourself, what is it that they're trying to say? And what is it that they're trying to achieve? And then you look at what they're actually saying they're trying to achieve. These things don't match.
Okay. They should match then.
I wonder why they don't. Yeah,
I wonder why they don't.
Well, in my opinion, I think this is sort of gradually shared more and more, but it's an ideology, you know. We've got postmodern critical social justice theories interfering with all of our legislation and language, and the Midwifery Council scope of practice is heavily influenced by critical race theorists and queer theorists.
Yeah. How did that happen, you think?
Oh, well, it's the same way it's happened everywhere else. It's institutional capture. You get one or two. In this case, midwifery has been specifically, it's quite clear that midwifery has been specifically targeted for capture. And that's because if you wanting to develop a movement and advance a movement that takes control of women's language and all of our spaces and reproduction, then that's where you want to go, you know, right to the heart of that. So there's a lot of very high-level critical race theorists and queer theorists involved in developing the scope, more than there are in other places. So they've had a very outsized impact on the development of the scope. And you can really see that. I think the best place to really see this is in the council's account or the collaborative reference group that they engage to write the first draft. You can see that in their account, our journey of what they did. And you can see that they spent, when you really read that, you can see that there was a goal already in place to replace the words woman and baby and mother and pregnancy and childbirth and anything to do with women and babies and pregnancy with whānau. And this very, you know, it's all about cultural safety and the Treaty Principles Act. And so when you're watching them do this through the journey, you can see that this was their goal when they started. And that some of them knew that this was the goal and some of them didn't.
Oh, okay. That's interesting. Yep.
Mm. And you can see the progression of it. So they take them through this, whoever the critical race theory, and I've got some, you know, we've got some thoughts about who those people are, but within that collaborative reference group, you can see that they they first set up a situation where they said, right, we're going to redefine the scope and we're going to rewrite it, and we need to do this from a treaty honouring perspective. And then they went through what that meant, and they took them through all of the critical race theory ideas, you know, kind of in layman's terms about and their responsibilities as treaty partners, and how important it was to privilege the needs of tangata whenua over anybody else, because that would rectify any inequality. So you've got, and then they play this game. They've gone through all of this, and bearing in mind that this process took 2 years, so what they've gone through is quite extensive. So they get to this point where they've set it up so that the people who don't know what's going on, they're now primed to accept whatever they're told. And so they play this little game, this little word game, where they have to pick out their favourite words. And the number one word that they all chose at that point was whanaungatanga. And so this was what they thought was the most important thing. You know, they wanted to, or the non-captured people, or the people who were in the process of being captured on that collaborative reference group, were now really on board with this idea. And then they take these three decisions, one to remove all of the words that reference sex in any way, so any grammatical structure that will allow for correctly sexing people. And then they take another decision to remove all of the words for woman from the scope and replace them with whānau. And it's really, you can see how that when they write this, that someone has suggested this to them.
Right, to get around a descriptor of some sort.
Yes.
A more specific, you know, descriptor, like woman.
Yes, well, they had this goal in mind from the beginning. When they applied for the funding, they said that what they wanted to do was to centre women, the new scope would be centred around a continuity of care model with women in the context of the whānau at the centre.
Yeah.
So that was already the goal. It's only that some of them didn't know that. And so they, and a few of them fought back. They said, no, we don't want to, you know, but it didn't take long because they'd already gone through this process of being captured before they all went, oh, right, I see. Because somebody told them that this was consistent, philosophically consistent with Maturanga Māori principles of paradigms of holism.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, and they all went, oh, I see.
You don't want to go there, right? You don't want to
have anything bad to say about that. I'm sure, you know. And so, but they've already been through.
So that was a Trojan horse, the whole
thing.
Backstory, the Māori backstory.
Yeah.
Was a Trojan horse.
It was
a straw man to slip something through.
Yes and no. It's the cover for the queer theory.
Right.
So that none of these people
It's got nothing to do with Māori.
No, it's got nothing to do Māori with Māori. You know, absolutely nothing. It's completely contradictory to the culture. So what they did was to use critical race theory to trick everybody into this and to adopt it for a queer theory outcome.
It seems like the modification of language, we'll get to some of that, in chatting about it last week, was kind of anticipated. That it's like playing a hand. You play up your hand and you do a deal, you throw up as much as you think you probably won't get away with, and then just step back a little to make a deal. And it kind of felt like that. So we'll change a few words. Oh, we'll change a few words now, and that should be okay. But yet the fundamental thinking was still embedded in there. For example, I think there's still talk about transgender in the description, whereas they're talking about women and mothers. So if you think you're another gender, you're already covered in the description. It's been singled out. So it's like that they were sort of overplaying the hand to be able to dial it back a little to get kind of what they wanted in anyway. That was the impression I got.
Yeah, I mean, I think that it's the motte and bailey situation, you know, where you, like you say, you know, you've got this indefensible or a much harder to defend area, and then you can retreat to a much more easily defensible position.
Yeah.
And then you say that the people who are accusing you of something else.
Yeah. Like, we put woman back in it. Settle down. We put woman back in it. But that's not the full story.
No, it's not. And they wouldn't have done that if there hadn't been this much pressure. They had no intention of ever putting it back in, and they were forced to do that. So I think it's probably true that around in terms of inculcating gender as a concept into our language and legislation around the world, not just in New Zealand, but that they push for more than what they think they're going to get so that they wind up with what they actually want, you know. But the answer to that is to not accept any of it, because it's all flawed. So when they've come back, you know, they were forced to put the words woman back in by the lawyers and by the public pressure and by Deb Hay's petition and,
yep.
and you know, just the sheer number of people. But they did it pretty bitterly. They weren't stoked about it. And you can see that from their oral submission as well when they came to the petitions committee hearing day, that they were really unprepared for having to make any additional changes. They thought that that was going to be good enough.
Right, yeah.
And what has now happened, so the scope is the subject of two select committees, and there are multiple select committees in Parliament who deal with various different things. And the Deb Hay's petition went to the petitions committee, and the scope, after it was gazetted in the New Zealand Gazette, which happened the day before Deb's petition was presented, they hung on to it until the day before, which for reasons I don't quite understand, but that's what they did. So then it was gazetted. And once it's been gazetted, then it goes to the Regulations Review Committee. And they're the ones who determine whether or not the language is actually legally applicable. And lots of people, lots of women, the Women's Rights Party, Katrina Biggs, Deb Hayes, and others, and of course Manawahine Kōrero, we wrote complaints to the Regulations Review Committee. And you do that based on standing orders. That's how they judge whether a document is right or not. And for reasons I don't know, they didn't tell us why, other than that our complaint wasn't relevant to those standing orders, but MWK's wasn't accepted, which means it's not a matter of public record. But the others were, you know, we object to that on the grounds that the whole thing is supposed to be for the benefit of Māori women.
Yeah, and, premised on, you know, Māori. They're just using that, aren't they? I mean, that's so cynical. That's so cynical.
And they don't want to hear from us at all, because we're saying that's not Te Ao Māori, that's not right, this is wrong, you know, and you know, nobody seems to want to hear that. So anyway, but the complaints that did go in were very good, and the committee have made recommendations on the basis of those complaints to the Midwifery Council, and those are as yet confidential, but they will become public knowledge when the committee makes its final report. But what isn't confidential is the council's response to them. So that's now a matter of public record, and you can go and look that up. But they've taken on board those recommendations and altered the wording, whatever that recommendation was, but they've altered the wording, and they've offered to put it through if the Regulations Review Committee accepts these changes. Then the council would like to put the scope, the new revised scope, which is now version 5, one for every year we've been doing this, they would like to put that to public consultation before they decide whether or not to gazette it again. Now, this is really great news, because that's what we want. We want everybody to know about it, and we want everybody to have an opportunity to contribute. And we want more Māori to find out about what's going on And have an opportunity to actually participate and discuss these words. Because the new scope, although it is an improvement on the previous one that we were talking about last week, but it's still not good enough. And it still tries to avoid using the word woman anywhere. It's still using whānau inappropriately and without cause, and it's still got these dubious translations, kahu pōkai. You know, these are words that need to be discussed among all 103 iwi and
Māori. What does that actually mean? Can you just remind us again?
So kahu pōkai is the new invented term for midwife that they've made.
Ah, right. Yeah, that's it. Yeah.
Yeah. And it doesn't mean midwife. It can't mean midwife. It doesn't matter what way you slice it. It can never be midwife. If
what does it mean? Or doesn't it actually, is it a sort of like a
really
recombinated word?
It's a metaphorical made-up term. It's very difficult to directly translate it, and it certainly doesn't mean midwife. If you were going to translate it, you would... There's so many definitions for kahu and pōkai that you could really translate it in a multiple, number of ways.
What it does, though, is it dilutes down something of real meaning, of definition, right? Accurate definition. That's what it does.
That's what it does. And it replaces existing words that have been understood as midwife, like kai whakawhānau, for example, that is a known te reo Māori word that is understood as midwife, and so is wahine whakawhānau, and, you know, right. they're regional, some of these terms. You know, te reo Māori isn't uniform across the whole country.
Yeah.
It's got distinct variations and meaningful variations, and it's not appropriate for the Midwifery Council to decide what the word for midwife is going to be on behalf of everybody. That's just not all right.
Well, it just seems to me that it's like an appropriation of a culture to create a clear space for another, well, I'd say counterculture, actually, to sort of slip in the back door. But it's being enabled by women on many occasions. What do you make of that?
Oh, God.
I mean, you know, some might say, well, you're doing it to yourselves. What can we do? You know, if you're going to do it to yourselves, ladies.
Well, you know, it looks like that on the surface, right? But the whole movement is essentially a men's rights movement. It's about erasing women.
Yeah.
The women who are going along with this are captured. They're ideologically captured. They focused on things like, for example, Judith Makata Cooper, who is one of the co-chairs of the Collaborative Reference Group and a very, very qualified midwife. Mm-hmm. But she's also a doctor of philosophy, who is a critical race theorist and equity theorist and queer theorist.
You don't know that when you're signing up for a midwife?
No, you know, so she really believes all of this, you know. Yeah. To me, her critical race theory approach is white saviorism run amok.
Nicely put, yeah, I get that.
I don't like it. It's really creepy and self-serving. And the queer theory element has been largely driven, into the public sphere, as we all understand, and into our legislation. But in the case of the Midwifery Council and the Scope of Practice Project, which was under the auspices of the Aotearoa Midwifery Project, we talked about this last time too, it happened at the same time, concurrently, as the Trans Pregnancy Care Project.
Right,
and there
okay.
are so many links.
Overlaps, yeah.
Yeah, between these two projects. They've shared information, they've swapped definitions, they've done all kinds of things. So really what has happened here is that they've used it, and they have some critical race theorists on the in the Collaborative Reference Group and on the council who are genuinely committed to that concept. You know, they really believe in critical race theory. They think that this is the way forward. So they're very...
But that's got nothing to do with having a baby.
No, it
this
doesn't.
This is the thing.
you know, but that's not how they see it. They see it as a, this is what capture does to you. It actually interferes with your critical thinking, you know.
Yeah. So there was still, there was nothing wrong with the original.
No, there was nothing wrong with the original.
Rules and regs that have been there for 20 years that defined everything very clearly and legally.
Yes.
Now it's, well, it is a Pandora's box that's well and truly open here.
Yes.
Okay, so what do you think will happen here? What's your read of how this will likely sort of play out? Will it be enough to make those changes to satisfy?
No. No, well, it won't be enough for us. It'll never be enough.
But for the establishment, you know.
For the establishment, maybe. You know, they're awfully willing to throw women under the bus, as we know. And
why is that, do you think? That fascinates me.
Well, I think that's, I mean, my opinion is that it's just misogyny. You know, people just don't, they don't care.
But other women are in there too, playing this game.
Women can be misogynists as well. If you look at women's roles in communities, we're the helping people, you know. We do the social work. We do the caregiving. We do all that stuff. We really care about our communities. And if you tell us that it's cruel to not say X or whatever, a large number of women are going to believe you, and they're going to want to try and be kinder. And that's really destructive, and women need to stop doing that. You know, we've got to stop doing that and just stand up and say no. You don't have to be kind. You have to have boundaries. That's what boundaries are for. So you can lay them down and say, well, no, you know, I'm willing to acknowledge your health needs, but I'm not going to change all my language and the legislation that governs my sex class for you.
Just in the short time we got left, estradiol patches. Now, apparently there's a global shortage, and I think I was reading there's a global shortage because women have been struggling to get hold of these products because men are kind of using them and sort of like putting pressure on the global supply, and that's affected us here. Is that right?
Yes.
That's crazy, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, I've got friends who can't get hold of estrogen, you know, and they're going through, they're entering the menopausal stage of their life, and really difficult and taxing on their bodies, and they need this, you know, they need the estrogen, and they can't get hold of it because a whole bunch of porn sick autogynephilic men are out there trying to grow breasts.
Oh, God, what's the world come to?
You know.
You got to ask, right? You got to ask.
You got to ask. And I think that the most powerful thing that people can do right now is to write to the Regulations Review Committee. And on the Manawahine Korero website, we've got the links there on the latest post about the Midwifery Council for who to write to. And write to the Regulations Review Committee and say, we really like this offer of public consultation. We really want that. We're not happy with these wording changes. We want the word woman back. We want the old scope to be reinstated until this matter is concluded. You know, as the active scope.
Yep.
And just say all the things that you want to say and write to the Regulations Review Committee, write to your MP, write to the Midwifery Council, write to the Maternity Services Consumer Council. The pressure, now is not the time to go, oh, that's good. They're correcting it. They're going to fix it. It's going to be all right. It's not going to be all right. We have to double down now and fight harder. Because it gets harder when they change the goalposts like this and people start saying, oh, but they're being reasonable, you know.
Yeah, Mo, that sounds okay. It's a tactic.
It's a tactic. It's a strategy, and it's not in good faith, and they very clearly still want their queer theory agenda in there and to remove women from the business of midwifery as far as possible, unless we're surrogates. You know, unless you're a birthing uterus or whatever, the horrible.
Right, so the depersonalized.
Very.
You don't have to go back very far to, no one was ever talking about this. These were never issues. Yeah. I mean, it's like we've gone off the rails, gone loopy just recently. Yeah. It's what it feels like.
Well, I've watched a really good, a really good video actually by Mr. Menno, who you can find him online. He's a Dutch campaigner. And he did this really great history of the transgender movement video recently. And it talks about how long this has actually been coming for us. And it's about 100 years. Also, what's interesting is the correlation between this movement has grown in proportion with increasing freedom for women. So we've got
That's interesting. That's
it is, isn't it? You know, you look at the turn of the 20th century and the beginnings of in the suffrage movement in the late 19th century, and then you start to see in the early part of the 20th century this trans movement coming up. Suddenly men want to be women. And it's you have to ask yourself, is this whole thing
just I'm a man, so I can have a view on this. I don't think it's that they want to be women. They want to occupy the position of women. They don't want to actually be a woman. They kind of want to occupy the space. And I think it's now how do I explain that? It's almost like you kind of get off on the awkwardness of it.
It's a takeover of all things woman. For some of these autogynephiles, they see being a woman as a soft option.
For living,
yeah. That it's nicer and gentler, and you don't have to work so hard, and you get to talk about flowers and pretty things, and you know, I mean, you can do that as a bloke, for God's sake.
Well, I know women who don't talk about those things as well.
I mean, I saw a post the other day that said, "Are there any women who don't wear makeup every day?" And I'm thinking,
hello,
outside. Yeah.
Well, don't they say Roman civilization is an example of it? Well, when it gets to this, it's like a measure of the crumbling of a culture, the degrading of a society. It sort of gets outlandish before it falls, you know?
Yeah, and I think that one of the things that causes that is that when the general public stop believing in whatever story that's being enacted as the vision, when you stop believing in that because it's obviously no longer true, or you know, the powerful aren't acting in ways that they say that your whole society is supposed to be predicated on, then you start to see this kind of cultural collapse and societal collapse. And certainly that happened to Rome, and I also think that some of the Aztec culture, you know, ripping out hearts and chopping off you know, all of that is a similar kind of phenomenon. And I don't think it's wrong to say that we're in a really important time in human history, that we're going through something quite profound, a societal change and a shift. And it's up to us as individuals and as members of the public. We're always going to be the ones who eventually drive what happens. To determine what we want the vision of the future to be. And I think that it's not enough just to say, oh, we don't like this. We have to say what we do want, you know? We want a society where women are valued. We want a society where our children are protected. We want a society where the natural world isn't being totally destroyed all the time. We want all these things. And we have to start talking about the things we do want as well as the things we don't want, so that people have an alternative. You know, they can say, well, that's a dumb idea. What about this?
Without everyone falling over in sort of faux shock.
Yeah.
And what you just said, like, did he just say that?
Yes.
Yeah, if I said it 10 years ago, you would have agreed with me. Yeah.
Of course, you know, and it's been coming for a long time as well. And I, you know, that not just, and when I say the 100 years, that's an historical perspective, but even just now, we're in 24, and I look back at university, my university years, and I can remember women's studies was changed to gender studies in about 2008.
Right, there you go.
And I said at the time, I didn't take women's studies. I was doing other things, but I noticed it when I was looking through which papers I was going to do, and I thought, that's weird, because I was doing linguistics, and so to me, that didn't mean anything. I thought, what?
Now you know.
Now I know. And at the time, I said to another female friend of mine who's now, you know, a TERF as well, but I said, don't you think it's a bit weird? Doesn't this mean everybody studies? And she goes, oh, yeah, but the fight for women's rights is over. And that was kind of the thing about it then, was that, you know, we're done now.
Yeah.
Now we have to concentrate on this other thing. And it was all lies, you know.
Well, I know how men think. And I'm telling you, there's more to it than just the happy clappy stuff. I'm sure of it. I think there's a kick to be had out of living this life. It's like a thrill.
Absolutely.
It almost be a sexual thrill, you know?
Oh, it is. Yeah. Autogynephilia is a fetish. Yeah. They get sexual pleasure out of dressing up as women and pretending to be women.
And dominating
women. It's a thrill that's why you can't say, yes, we can have these men in our bathrooms, because the what turns them on is forcing them to get in there against.
That's why they're there.
That's why they're there. You know, all of it, all those autogynephiles are like that. And they will, it's very Silence of the Lambs. If they could wear our skin, they would.
Ooh, wow. Yeah. Boy, we live in interesting times, don't we? Sarah Henderson, spokeswoman for Mana Wahine Korero, thank you for coming on RCR. Let's see what happens with, do we know the timeline here when the Regulations Review Committee sort of makes their next move? I guess they have to have something submitted to them again to do that, do they?
What it seems, we don't have an official timeline. From what I can tell, once things are in select committee, it can take anywhere from 6 months to a year for the final report to be finished.
Right.
But lots of things will happen before that. And because the scope is in two committees, and because there are so many women who are fighting really, really hard, tooth and nail, we're going, no fight is going unfought.
Yes.
There will be things to keep up with. And certainly the most important of these at the moment is opportunities to provide feedback. And the way that we can guarantee that actually happens.
And they're listened to, because that's one thing that we've discovered recently, is that people, 97% of people say a particular thing, but it's disregarded.
Yes, and that is a concern, that even if this goes through the public feedback process and then they say, oh, well, you know, still 87 or 92% of people, we still don't like it. But it's pretty good, so we're going to go with it, you know, and then we have to do all of this again.
Yeah.
And there's a cost to the public purse to this, you know. The Midwifery Council raised, and I put this in quotes, that they raise their own funds, and they do that by extortionate prices from their midwives for their annual practicing certificates. So it's about $750 a year now.
Yep.
Just to be allowed to practice, which...
Oh, yeah. Where does the money go? Yep.
Yeah. So this is what they're getting from the midwives to do this, and they also have applied, as we know, for a minimum of $370,000 or $380,000 to write the thing in the beginning. And this is costing us, you know.
Jeez.
It's costing us. It's been going on since 2019 on paper. We know that it will have started, 2019 was when they started this process, but they were talking about it before then, of course.
Right.
So this is now 5 years that this has been
ching,
happening.
Ching, 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 and ching, ching.
Ching, ching, and meanwhile, 10 women and 650 babies continue to die every year in New Zealand. That's what they need to be focusing on.
Yeah,
not deleting all the words for women and babies. And
so this has been totally hijacked.
Absolutely.
This is like a takeover.
Yeah. This is what institutional capture by wokeist DEI critical race theory looks like. It looks really bad.
Boy, Okay, it's right there. Okay, Sarah, thanks for coming on RCR and explaining that.
You're very welcome. Thank you for having us. Yeah, much appreciated.
The RCR shop has great gift ideas, from great-looking tees, hoodies, caps, tote bags, bumper stickers, and more. The RCR shop is now open at www.realitycheck.radio/shop.